Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Aaron Hudgens. He's a retired first sergeant and the surviving spouse of Staff Sergeant Jerry J. Hudgens. And today we're going to be talking about his 26 years of service with the Oklahoma Army National Guard, his recent appointment to the Survivors Advisory Working Group, with his work with the nonprofit, and how he was able to fulfill his wife's dream of graduating from college. Before we get into all of that though, Aaron, I want to welcome you to the show. Glad to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. This is some pretty amazing stuff. So I'm very excited to actually get some of this stuff out and tell my story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad to be able to help with sharing that story, sharing your story and your wife's story as well. Tell us about your maybe your service. Let's start maybe with a little bit with that, your experience in the National Guard. I know you deployed a couple times. Tell us about some of that and how that kind of shaped your career.
Sure. So, like everyone else, I got out of high school and I wanted to be in the service, but I didn't want to go too far. So I joined the Oklahoma National Guard, thinking I'd be just a traditional soldier. I'd get my college 6 years and be out. I found myself, 3 years into it in Bosnia, which I didn't think I was ever going to deploy because they don't, at the time it was before 9/11, pre 9/11. We didn't deploy anywhere. So, and the last time we deployed was like Korea. So I wasn't too concerned about that. And next thing I know, they're like, "Hey, we're going to Bosnia." And so, the Balkans were probably an amazing experience, and it was my hands down my favorite tour of the two. After that, I wanted to do it full time. I just found this drive to be like, "Man, I'd like to do that all the time." And so, I applied for an AGR position at the same unit that I deployed with, and I got it. And while that happened, that's when 9/11 kicked off. And so, in between of this and that, next thing you know, the unit's back in Afghanistan, then back. I got to miss that tour, and I heard it was like the Wild West show down there. But after I got back, I mean, after they got back, we settled up for another deployment in 2007. And in between that, we are getting the calls because you're in the National Guard. We answer the calls to home more than we answer the calls to overseas. So I had four state activations while I was in, which was the May 3rd tornado in '99 here in Oklahoma that destroyed Moore and Minco, and then right after September 11th, I did the airport security for about 6 months, and so that was actually a really interesting experience. And then Katrina. We saddled up, and the entire 45th went to Katrina down in New Orleans. And that was, I don't know, that could be a whole show in itself. Is Katrina was absolutely a crazy, wild experience. I have so many good stories about that place. But we were down there in the very beginning, about 3 days into it, and Oklahoma came down there, and we were there full force. And then, of course, my tour to Iraq, which is at Camp Buka, was, nothing. Nothing sexy, nothing exciting. We had just about everything that everyone else had that if I could think of that would be a normal tour in Iraq. A lot of downtime and not what I was expecting. I was expecting a completely different experience going overseas during the war. And but it, you know, it we it had its benefits. And so when we got back is when I decided I was like, I need to change a profession. Infantry life was it was great and I loved it, but my body was ready for a change. And so I applied for a job up at state AGR's position and I got it. And so I switched over to a 42 Alpha MOS, but I found that very, very rewarding, especially in the AGR world, because there's a lot of things that you don't take into account. And so I learned a whole nother side, like the corporate version of the Army, more or less. And so
Okay.
I spent the last of my part of my years like running numbers and stats, statistics, and things that the general would need to know on a regular basis. And so that is what I ended up doing for pretty much the last part of my career. And that's where I'm my wife.
And that's where you met your wife, you said? Is that okay? Oh, awesome. So that kind of like brought you guys together. That's pretty cool. I do want to kind of circle back for a second because when I posed this question, I caught myself because of something that you brought up during this. But I said you were deployed a couple times, and of course, I was referring to overseas deployment, your Bosnia and Iraq deployments, but. Being National Guard, especially in the Midwest, there are state activations as well, where you are going to help tornadoes, hurricanes, other natural disaster type things, 9/11, airport security, those types of things. And I don't think that gets enough attention when people realize that there are disasters. There are people who go and help, and a lot of times that's the National Guard. You know, when they go and they show up there to, help with whatever it is that needs, helping at that point, right? It's each situation is going to be a little bit different, but the National Guard gets called up quite frequently. I would imagine probably in your neck of the woods, because of just how frequent the natural disasters occur. I mean, I was National Guard. I was in Connecticut, and yeah, we got some hurricanes that came up. But by the time they got up to Connecticut, they were usually lower grade. They weren't like Category 5, crazy Katrina style hurricanes at that point. It's just a lot of rain and wind. Yeah, sure, there's some damage that takes place, especially along the coast. But we didn't get activated as frequently probably as you guys did, for that type of stuff. Although I know that we did send people down to for Katrina and other things like that. That was I think before my time. So I didn't go down for that. But there was a lot of that type of stuff that happened as well, right? So you met your wife in this new role on the state level, right? Tell us about that, and tell us kind of a little bit about your story there, and kind of what all happened with your wife, and how all that kind of played out.
Once I became an E8, I took a accepted a position to be a first sergeant back in the infantry. And if you don't know National Guard, a lot of your AGRs are dual status. So we which means is a lot of us have two jobs. So you could be a brigade S1 Monday through Friday, but on drill weekend you could be a first sergeant, which is exactly what happened to me. So when I accepted my E8 position, I went on to become a first sergeant at Alpha Company 179. And that was where I had met her through the brigade. And first it was just back and forth, very professional, nothing. She was just, but man, she was fire. And in the sense that just she didn't take a lot of crap. She was very alpha. She didn't, and if she thought you were full of crap, she'd let you know you were. And as an E5, and I'm an E8, I'm like, I don't think you realize how this works. But at the same time, I was like, that's awesome because I don't see a whole lot of people standing up to senior grades. And she did. And so for about a year later, when she got promoted, I reached back out to her and was like, hey, and before I could finish, she was like, you want to go out? And I was like, yeah, actually I did. And so we dated for a couple of months, and then it was like, you know what, I would like to marry you. And I was like, what? And because it took me completely off guard. And she was like, well, we already know each other, what's the point? Life's short. And I was like, you know what, let's do it. And so we had a big, beautiful mixed family. And we were I went down to Hurricane Harvey and then came back, and we decided, yeah, we're just going to do it. And so we've been together for about closing we were closing in a year whenever she got the call to go. So she had already deployed twice. So when she first got in the Army, she was 82nd Airborne, loved it. She did her first time her tour in active duty, and then she was in Iraq for 18 months, came home, switched over to the National Guard, did some recruiting, and then crossed over and was at the brigade doing some programs with them was when I met her. And she had already deployed once to Afghanistan with the 120th Engineers. And so Oklahoma is notorious for deploying. If you don't want to deploy, then Oklahoma Guard is not for you, because you're going to go. They deploy all the time. And so she got the call again, which that's what, we'll get back, we'll get into that later, where it inspired her to want to go in the infantry, because she wanted to see if she could do it. And the goal was to, make it to this third deployment, but she wanted to be a staff sergeant in a squad. And so that was her drive for that. And so up until that point, she never really talked about wanting to do it. And I don't blame her, because, I did it for the first 15. It's not sexy. I mean, there's a lot of, and for women, it's not anything worth writing home about. But she was also a Caddo Indian. So she's a very proud Caddo woman. She loved her heritage and where she came from. And that was another thing that drove her, was she becomes infantry, she could be considered a fem you know a female warrior in her
Sure.
tribe, and could have been the first. So, that was a big deal to her, and I can totally understand that. And so, yeah, she got that opportunity and but came back, and then her deployment is what caused a lot of the issues. Was she broke her hip, went down to Fort Hood in the WTU, and at the in the WTU, they allowed her to come home for her physical therapy. And when she got home and she found out that this was it, that her career was now because of the injury, that's when she took a downhill turn. And but she like most of us, and she hit it very well, and she didn't give me any of the signs or anything that I'd be looking for as a first sergeant, or just someone just looking out for it. And so it took me and my entire family completely by surprise when it happened. So, and the kids were home, and it was an event that to this day I will never be able to get out of my mind. And I replay it all the time, because I, as a leader, you immediately want to look back and go, where did I miss it? Where was the signs? Where was the cues that I should have been picking up on, and I missed him. And it eats me up to this day to look back and go, man, and I somewhere in there I missed it, and I blame myself a lot. But I've learned to move forward, even though this happened on my watch. And so
Yeah, I think just to kind of talk a little bit about what you just brought up there, a lot of times, like we go through training to help us identify those types of signs, especially in a leadership role, you want to be looking out for the people who are under you, and so you want to be able to identify when is someone, kind of showing signs that things might not be right, that things might be going south. And so you go through that type of training, and when you're around people less frequently than, let's say, in a marriage, when you're always around that person, you might notice shifts in their attitude or behaviors or things like that, because it's okay, this is how so and so was yesterday. And then I'm not going to see them again for, maybe a few more days. And then all of a sudden their personality has changed a little bit. And so you might notice that shift a little bit more versus perhaps something that might be a little bit more gradual that takes place, okay, o over the next few days. Okay, there's a little bit of a gradual shift. And it's like, oh, well, okay, it's just almost the same. It's just a little bit different, but it's almost the same as it was last time. And then, there's just these gradual shifts, and it might make it even harder to recognize those types of things in someone who's closer to you, versus someone who's, not as close that way. So, definitely don't blame yourself for any of that, or replay it in your head. I understand that, but I just as a from w one guy to another, it's like, don't do that to yourself, because that's just a hole that you don't want to go down. And so I'm hoping that you can find yourself out of that. But But you've taken this experience, this let's just call it a tragic experience, right? And so you do some work with the Survivors Advisory Working Group now as well, right? So can you talk a little bit about that? What is that group, and how does that help folks, and how is it helping you?
So the SOG is what they call it, and it stands for Survivors Advisory Working Group. It's an appointment from the United States Army Chief of Staff. So it's a big deal. They only have they used to have 12, now they're down to 8. But what they do is they represent survivors of active duty, reserve, National Guard, or on quality life issues as it pertains to the Army survivors. It's members strengthen communication between the total Army and the Army survivor community. And so they're chosen because of their backgrounds and what they represent. They have so many connections in the survivor community. And so they bring them together to try to solve issues and with just the Army side of the house. Now each branch has their own. I don't know what they call their group, but so yeah, you fill out a packet. And once you're appointed, you get an official letter from the Army Chief of Staff saying that you've been appointed. Then they start, gearing you up. And for the first year, it's like drinking from a fire hose. I have never knew so much stuff was going on in the survivor community until I became a SOG member. And for the first year, you don't really say much because I was so lost at what we were even talking about. And I'm still in the Army. I was having to look up acronyms that they were using because I was like, what is that? Why are we even talking about that? And it's because, I know the survivor community is a completely separate world in itself. And to give you an idea, like the SOG members that are appointed, I don't know who any of these people are. I know they're survivors. And then, I'm sitting and right next to me, they send you down to the Washington, D.C. every 6 months. So I'm flown to Washington, and I go to the Pentagon. I sit in a room with the other 8 survivors, and we talk about issues and things that are going on. But to give you an idea, like who I'm with, Patty Elliott, who is the Gold Star Mothers National President, and she was instrumental in getting the change from Fort Benning to Fort Moore. She was one of those key members, and she's also the national president of the Gold Star for Mothers. She's a SOG member. And you've got Jenny Taylor. She's a big member out of Utah that has her own nonprofit, her own podcast, and she seems to be moving in 30 different directions all at the same time without ever sleeping. And she's a mom of 7. And I don't even know how that's even humanly possible. But she's really well known. Christy Simpson, who was the 2018 Army Spouse of the Year, which I didn't know there was even a competition for something like that. And I don't even know where would you even go to be a selected. But anyway, she was the top out of the entire United States Army in 2018. But she's been on CNN. She's been on just about every. She's reported to Congress multiple times on spout on issues with survivors. We got Tracy Volk, who was a she's like the legal of the group, that anything that has to do with policy that goes in front of Congress or anything, she's writing it up. So she's this like phenomenal, does it all. And she's sitting there. My mentor, who is Wendell, he's his son was killed in Afghanistan. And the Special Forces has just got done naming a building after his son. And so these are the caliber of members, and there isn't an element of survivor issues they don't know about. And then I show up out of nowhere, and I was like, I'm sorry, what are we talking about? What is that issue? Like, I had no idea that was even something to be. And so instead of trying to, hang with the Joneses, I sat back and tried to learn from them because they're phenomenal and they're rock stars in their own right and their own states and their own survivor community. And that's just the caliber that are at that level. And you don't just get there by filling out an application. They're at those positions because of the stuff they've done for the community and the nation as it pertains to survivors.
Right. Now,
So
with the work that you do through this group, what are the impacts on the survivor community? Like, what are some of the things that come out of this group, and what is it that a survivor who might be out there, who might be listening, what are some of the benefits that they end up seeing, through the work that you guys do?
The SOG was actually instrumental just recently, a couple of years, about a year ago, when survivors, if they elected to give their DIC to their children, that was something that was unreversible, and so the kids would get basically their parents' retirement until the age of 18. And what they did was they had that reversed, and so the SOG was able to reverse it. It took several years to get it through. So everything that the SOG deals with is at a national level, so it takes a lot longer for it to go through. And so they were able to reverse the where it was actually going to the kids, and they sent it. It was able to reverse it back to the next of kin, or the survivor that was initially identified. By doing that, it allows that benefit to continue on. It doesn't have an end date. Whereas if you give it to your children, when they turn 18, it stops.
Okay.
And so, so some people that, the kid could have been like 17 and a half whenever their parent passed away. That's 6 months, and that's about it. And so they're getting their father or their mother's retirement, but now it stops.
Sure.
And so that was something they saw that was a big issue. Plus, it was a taxable, and that was causing, kids to have to pay taxes on their parents when they don't even have an income,
Right.
which made no sense. And so there was, and if your parent was an officer and they had some rank, oh my gosh, they're paying $6,000 at least in taxes every year.
Yeah,
And
right.
so they just saw that as an issue. And so they've been working on that when I got there, and it had just been approved. And so they had it reversed, which was a huge victory, because so many thought the right thing to do was to give it to the kid. And they do get it. They get it, every month until they turn the age of 18, but then it stops. And so that doesn't mean their needs stop. It doesn't
Right.
mean they absolutely need that money. And so it went back to the survivor, the initial, and now it has opened up a whole nother lane for the ones getting it, that, oh, there's not a I can continue to operate without having to get a third job. And so when I was working on the thing I've been working on for the past 3 years was the we get the SVP and the DIC stops if your spouse remarries. And so that has been something we've been working on, and that was more or less in my lane from the time I got there until now. And they have two bills that are up at the Hill right now that are directly about that. The Love Lives Long Act is what we're fully backing and trying to get that. And we have so many people in TAPS and that have an entire teams dedicated to this one. We not only does it give it back, but it goes back and it gives it to them from when they lost it until now.
Oh, okay. So you get the retroactive for that too. Well, that's good because I know I've heard of that where, if a surviving spouse remarries, and I think it's before a certain age,
55.
55, yeah, that they lose all those benefits, and it's like that doesn't make sense because just like the name of the bill says, love does go on. Like there, people are, they still continue, but they still may have that need financially. And so it doesn't make sense to take that away. It's not like they chose to leave, it's the circumstances, right?
So the way I presented it to the Army Chief of Staff is, it's just like retirement. So I retired from the Army after 26 years, that I'm considered retired. But if I turn around and get a job tomorrow, I'm technically not retired. And so the way it works is, well, you're no longer retired. I'm not going to pay you your retirement. But I earned it. And so it's exactly the same way as someone got this benefit from the sacrifice that it doesn't matter if it was yours or somebody else's. They chose you to be the recipient of it. That doesn't change. And so just because I'm retired and I get another job, it doesn't mean I'm not retired from the Army. And so, and that doesn't mean you're going to take my benefits away from me because I got another job. The same exact thing. Just because I got remarried doesn't change the fact that when I was in the Army, I was a widow. Doesn't change any of that whatsoever. That's something that has been, put out there a lot was, no, that doesn't change who we are and what we've had to endure. And so that's been the big push. And so that one's the next on the list. And right now it's looking really good. It's looking like there's going to be a legitimate change coming up.
Well, yeah, and I hope so. And so I'm glad you were able to share some of that work that you guys do, because there are survivors out there who, just maybe just not knowing the details of some of these policies and laws and all that kind of stuff. And they go and get remarried, and then all of a sudden, those payments that were coming in every month, they stop, and so that like that. They may not realize that that is something that could happen. So, but it shouldn't happen that way, right? But so it's great that there are folks like you guys who are out there looking out for people and thinking about what are the possible implications of these policies, of these laws, and all that. Because, without folks like you, all these things could. Still just be sticking around, and there's no one out there advocating for these folks. So it's great, I think that there are people out there doing this type of work, trying to keep the survivors in mind and not forgetting about them. Just because the service member is gone, they've passed, doesn't mean that we completely forget about the ones that they leave behind, their families, their children, their spouses, folks like that.
So every soldier you have in uniform, you have a family behind them backing them up, and they have to endure what you don't get to see. And it's vital, and we'll talk about it later, how vital having family that will come in and step in when you have got 50 things going on at once and your hair's on fire and you're being attacked by bees. I mean, there's just and they're there the whole time going, I got you, I got you. And that's exactly what those families are doing. And they get they're the unsung heroes because I did both. When my wife deployed, I had to be the stay at home. And let me tell you, I have never got my butt kicked more times than I can shake a stick at than trying to take care of five kids, a house, two dogs. I mean, and this the amount of clothes that are thrown and had to be washed, I commend every stay at home spouse. I salute you because that is brutal. It really was. I was like, man, I have never gotten my butt kicked 7 ways from Sunday as I did with Gone.
Yeah, 100%. I totally know where you're coming from. Not for the duration, the length of time that you're talking about, but my wife was in the hospital a few years ago for 2 weeks. And so she was that whole 2 weeks she was there. Three kids at home, dog, trying to take care of all that and make sure they have food and make sure that I'm going to the hospital and visiting her and, doing all those things, going back and forth. Yeah, I felt like I couldn't catch up. And when she got out of the hospital, I was like, I don't think I ever realized how much I depend on her being here. Taking care of the kids, cooking the meals, doing the things that all the things that she does. And I couldn't imagine, a whole deployment. This was 2 weeks, and that to me that was plenty. I don't need any more than
Yeah.
that.
And I'm a first sergeant and a brigade S1, so I'm still trying to keep my head above water. It was equivalent to like trying to swim with an anchor, you know.
Right.
It didn't, every time you try to get up, you would lose where you were at, and I mean, you take 3 steps back and 1 step forward. I was counting the days and the minutes to when she was going to be coming back. I was like, oh, please,
I don't doubt it, 100%.
not taken behind the woods yet. So.
Yeah. So you're also involved with the Travis Manion Foundation. For folks who aren't familiar with that, tell us a little bit about your involvement and kind of what the foundation's all about.
The Travis Manion Foundation is a service-based organization, and it's based out of Pennsylvania, and it's based around the Lieutenant Travis Manion, who was killed in action in Iraq on April 29, 2007, which is interesting because I was there in 2007 at the exact same time, and so was my wife. My wife was with the 82nd in 2007. So all three of us, even though at the time we didn't know each other, were all in Iraq at the exact same time. So what drew me to them is they sent me an email, and it was a random email of, hey, you want to do an expedition with a bunch of survivors? I had never met anyone beside the survivors on the SOG, and I really wanted to meet some more. And so I signed up for it and forgot about it. And then I got accepted. And so I went down to Scottsdale, Arizona, and to the Ranch of Milcro. I'm butchering it. It's North Scottsdale, Milgro, like Milagro Foundation,
Okay.
and they do equine with horses.
Okay.
And Vanessa, who owns the ranch, is a phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal human being, and her story will break your heart too. And she runs this ranch out there, and you go and you work with the horses. You don't ride them, but you stay with them, and you do different activities, and it kind of gives you, and they will absolutely tell you how you're feeling without actually saying a word. It's an amazing experience if you've never done it. When I came back, I was so like over the top enjoyed. I was like, I need to know more about the foundation. And so that's when they said, hey, we're always looking for mentors to go teach character to kids. And I was like, well, that's really cool. I didn't know you guys did anything like that. And so I signed up and I became a mentor. And then that time, that's when my son was starting to get, he was like, what are you doing? So I told him about it. And he was like, that, can I do that? And I was like, well, yeah, no reason why he couldn't. So he signed up. And then Travis Manion Foundation sent him to Puerto Rico for a week. And he met 20 survivors as well. And that changed him immensely. He came back with direction, purpose. He was like, we got to start a chapter here because they've got around 13 chapters
Okay.
nationwide. Matter of fact, Phoenix is one of the biggest chapters that they have,
Oh, really?
and
Okay.
they are massive. So TMF Phoenix, you look them up, they got stuff going almost every weekend. It's impressive. And I'm a big fan of TMF Phoenix, so I'm trying to model what we have here with them because they're absolutely killing it. And so, but what it is, the mission is simple. We empower veterans and families of the fallen to develop character in future generations. And they do it in three ways. We do it by personal development, by youth development, and then by community impact. And so we do service projects, and we do just about anything you think of to give back to the communities that we love so much. And that's exactly what we do. And so if we're not doing a character does matter, we're trying to find, someone or something to support and help other veteran organizations where we team up with them all the time. I'm constantly reaching out to the nonprofits here that are veteran based, and I'm like, hey, let's do something together. Let's collaborate, because I can wield the power of the TMF with a smaller organization, and we can get, more out quicker. And so that's what we try to do because TMF is massive. It's a really big, when you look it up and you do the background on it, it's a very large organization,
Right.
and it's been there for a while. So I've enjoyed every minute. I've been in TMF for exactly a year, and I've dedicated my retirement to establishing the chapter and affecting everybody I can get my hands on with, giving them a different outlook on life. Because that's what we do. We give them We give them a reason to thrive. So.
Yeah, and from what I know of the organization, I obviously am familiar with them, but it's like giving someone a sense of purpose through this type of work, the community engagement and that type of things that you guys do, where otherwise you may not have that sense of purpose. You might be struggling sitting there. You might be listening to this right now, sitting there trying to figure out like, what is my purpose? What am I even doing right now? Maybe you're someone like yourself who's, in retirement and now, okay, what next? What do I do next? Right. Great thing is getting involved with the community, becoming some sort of mentor or, helping youth with various things because, we want to leave behind a better world than we found, right? And so if we can help those people who are coming after us to be better people, that's certainly a great purpose for folks who are sitting there scratching their head thinking, what's next for me? What's my next act, right?
Like myself, that I don't want to be pampered, and I don't, I have a hard time accepting compliments or accepting, hey, thank you for your service, and I'm like, oh, thank you for the support, but I don't, like I don't think I did anywhere near what I should have in order to gain that kind of respect. And so I when it's so the pampering, organizations that want to give me tickets to a game or want to give me, acknowledgement in front of many, I know. But if you are service-based, and that's what speaks to me, because that's, that's my love language. I want to give back. And so that's where I connected with TMF the most, was that working with others and helping and trying to make it a better place for the future. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so again, you said there's like 13 chapters around the country. So folks who are interested in that, go check it out. I'll put a link to the website in the show notes. But yeah, check it out. They might be in your area, and if not, kind of like what you're doing, see if there's an opportunity to set up a branch in your neck of the woods. That might be something that you could do as well. Maybe even take a, you said there's something going on, every weekend, probably in Phoenix. This time of year is beautiful in Phoenix, guys. Like, come on out to Phoenix and check it out. And see what's going on. Take a weekend trip and see, what it's all about, and maybe it's right for you. And if it is, then maybe there's an opportunity for you to set up something, in your area, right? So I want to kind of circle back a little bit. I know we talked a little bit about your wife and kind of the situation, with her and how you guys met and how you got into all of these survivors groups. But she also left behind kind of a bit of inspiration for you as well, to go to college and graduate from college. Tell us a little bit about that and how she inspired you and what kind of led you there.
So, when after death, it was a couple of years down the line. I was still in the Army. I was still trying to figure out, which do I get out? Do I stay in? And I met another survivor, and her name is Michelle. And I was, her and I were just talking, and she goes, when my husband was killed in action, I didn't know what to do either. And so she goes, but we had made plans that when he retired, we'd go back to Washington State, where he is originally from, and we would live there. And she's like, that was the plan. And then when he was killed, she was like, I think I want to honor our plan. So she packed up her and her son, and they moved from Fort Drum, New York, to Washington State. She had never been there, never seen it, didn't know anything about it. She moved to his hometown, and she loves it there now. And she just absolutely loves being there. But that was part of their plan. And so, as married couples, we always have plans. We have this, we're going to be together for, the remainder of our lives. What's the plan? And so JJ and I talked about going back to college when she got back from this third deployment, because we're huge OU fans. We live in Norman, Oklahoma. We love it. Our kids are OU fans. We go to the games all the time. And I was like, and so we had talked about, you know what, we can, the military is going to pay for our college. They've already paid for my associates. And so I was like, why don't we just go back to college? And so she was like, okay, we're going to go back. The plan is to go back when I come back. And that, and we good? And I was like, sure. And then, fast forward, when she wasn't there, part of that plan. But I, after hearing Michelle's story, I was like, why don't I honor my wife by honoring our plan?
Sure.
And, we hadn't thought that far ahead after, but it was a plan and we had a direction. So I said, I'm gonna, you know what? That was our plan. I want to honor that. So I did. I went, I applied, I got accepted, which I was shocked because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. But it, I got in somehow and I was able to make the grades. I made the dean's honor roll, but I think it was a mess up. Somewhere down there, someone had fat fingered a digit on the wrong side because there's no way. But somehow I made it and I graduated back in May of 2021. And there's actually a picture where we're walking, I'm about to walk on stage on the OU football field and I'm showing my tattoo because I got a tattoo of my wife's dog tag on me. And I'm looking up, and it was, to kind of commemorate, hey, this one's for you. And so that was part of the MAR plan. And after that, everything else just kind of, cascaded after that. And I always can look back and go, you know what? That was our plan, and we made it. So everything else has just been bonus.
Yeah, I think that that's nice because not only did you accomplish that goal, that plan, you kind of finished that, but you had that tattoo, and you kind of like brought her along with you. So she's a part of you, regardless. Like she's always going to be there as a part of you. There's always going to be a space in your mind that is going to be occupied by her presence. And so she was there through probably all the late night studyings, all the papers that you're writing, all the presentations you had to do, all the things that you had to do in class and everything else. She was there with you, right? And so you kind of got a chance to bring her along and accomplish that goal together, in that kind of out of the box thinking, but in a way that's exactly how that ended up happening. And so, I think that's great. And for other survivors who might be out there listening to this right now, feeling lost, feeling like they lost everything, which sure, I completely understand that. Losses like that are they're terrible to have to endure. But if there's something that you can grab onto, something from your past, a goal, a vision for the future, or something like that, where you want to have you move to a certain place in the country or in the world, or even just a travel, or just to go, I want to go see the pyramids or something, like that's your thing, go do it. Right. And you, again, just like you in school, you were bringing your wife along in your memories, physically tattooed on your body. You're bringing along that person with you, with everything that you do. And so, do that as a way to kind of honor those people. I think that's great.
You stick to a part of a plan that you guys talked about and just do it. You don't have to do all of it, but look back and reflect and go, you know what? We always talked about doing this. We always wanted to go to the Rocky Mountains. We always wanted to go backpacking, on whatever. Honor, do it. Do it for them. Do it for, because they're not there anymore to fulfill that plan or that dream. So you do it. And then, you can look back and go, hey, that one's for you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's great. Sometimes you find inspiration in the strangest of places, and this is probably not something that you had envisioned, that you'd be find inspiration in something like that. But here it is. And then you accomplish this goal. And I think part of moving forward is figuring out like what are the things that I can do. And if you can graduate college, like that's, it's not a easy thing, just a check the box kind of thing. Like you have to go and you got to do, put in the work and do all that. Plus, you know, there's your job and kids and everything else that you have going on. You got a lot of plates that you're trying to keep spinning at the same time, right? But if you can accomplish that goal, all right, cool. What's that next thing? And how do you keep moving forward, right? Instead of just staying stagnant and staying in place in the same place and you know, doing the same things over and over again, which may not get you anywhere. If where you're at is not a great place and you just keep staying in that not great place, you might even slip backwards and not, you know, improve the, you know, quality of life or you know, experiences that you end up having, right? Now I know, you know, when she was deployed, that there was a lot of stress there. You were talking about that earlier. You know, to me, I think that that's got to be one of the hardest things. I know when I deployed, my wife was home. We only had one kid at the time, but regardless, I don't care how many kids you have, it's still not an easy thing to have to do. And holding down the fort like that is, I don't think people get enough credit. You know, the spouses who are back home, they a lot of times there's jokes about the spouses and things like that, but they really do provide the support structure that is required for
Excellent.
those folks who are deploying, who are serving, because you got to know that you got a solid foundation back home, so that those things, the kids are t being taken care of, they're being dropped off at school or sports or, you know, all those things all are still going to happen with or without you being there. You know, all these things are going to end up happening. You got to know that there is a solid foundation back home. You know, regardless of where the military sends you. So that, I think that's, just for the listeners, you know, who are, you know, maybe still serving and considering that marriage or that partnership or whatever it is that they're getting themselves into, make sure that's the right person who's going to be able to hold down that fort, who's going to be a strong, capable person, like you described. You know, you described her. She was a pretty strong person. So that's the type of person that I, you know, I think, is a great, you know, kind of addition to that military lifestyle, right?
It also helps when you
No,
have
go ahead.
two military like that. It does help in the sense that you understand what the other person is going through. Like I, you know, her long days and long nights, I know exactly why. I understand that getting up early. I understand coming in on your days off. I understand working through lunch. I understand drill weekends and what is, you know, required. And so did she. So there was a lot of like, hey, I got you. I understand. Like I'll have dinner ready, or hey, you know, I'm gonna go get so and so. And we did a lot of that. And a lot of it was actually after about a couple of weeks, it was unspoken. Like I didn't have to tell her, she would just know. As soon as I said, hey, I got this, she'd be like, okay. And then she, you know, first one home is cooking, first one, you know, is picking up the kids. You know, we were an absolute killer team when it came to that
That's
because
awesome. Yeah.
we understood each other's struggles.
You know, I'm kind of smiling because you know, like my wife and I, we have kind of like a unspoken communication. Like sometimes with just a look, we can tell what the other person's thinking, and we can have a whole conversation without saying anything. My kids get freaked out sometimes. We're at dinner, and you know, like we'll be sitting at the dinner table, and I'll give a look, and or she'll give a look to me, you know, whatever. And both of us know that, yeah, after dinner we're going to go out for ice cream or something. Like we just have that kind of communication. And so I'm kind of smiling when you're talking about that, because like that is that kind of communication where it's, you know, just understood and you are good to go with that. I feel like that's just amazing, to be able to have that type of you know, communication in a relationship. But it's cool. I know, so with all your involvement in all the survivors groups and things like that, what support or resources would you recommend for other spouses or family members of either deployed service members or survivors of a service member? Are there any specific organizations or resources that are available that you would recommend that they can utilize?
One of the biggest ones, and a lot of people, is called TAPS. And if you just, you type it's massive, and they've got just about every angle covered, and just about, and they cover, everything from pre-deployment, deployment, post-deployment. They have something for somebody, and they have unlimited resources. And I always tell people, like, start there. Even if you're not, if you're not a survivor, and you have a deployed spouse, start there, because they have a ridiculous amount of not only survivors, but inspired civilians and inspired veterans, and that are in it, because they're all in it for the right reasons. One day I hope TMF is at the same level as TAPS, because TAPS is on a whole nother playing field. And they have a pre-deployment, like, binder that they'll give you, and it tells you every single thing you need to line up and find and have before they ever walk out the door. Because I learned a very valuable lesson on all that when after she not only left, but then after she died, there was so many things that I was like, I didn't even think about that. I hadn't, you know what? I should have done some better backwards planning than what I did, because I took a lot of it for granted. I took the fact that, oh well, I'm in the army, I can come back to it, I can do that next time. And it cost us a lot, because I ended up we ended up not filling out a couple of documents that cost when she died. We didn't get family SGLI, because we didn't go back and recheck to make sure everything right. And that cost, that's a lot of money for those kids not to get. So, and boy, I tried everything I could to try to justify, and it never. But yeah, so I'd start there. And they do have a binder that will save your butt in the long run. And I wish I would have listened. You go through those briefings, it's check the block. Yep, got it, got it, got it. And you're zoned out. Just get me out of here so I can get home. And don't, because it's going to cost you. And it could be as, like, your spouse is coming home on just coming home from work and dies in a car accident. Could be going to drill and dies in a helicopter training accident. And next thing you're getting hit from 17 different locations, and you don't even know which fire to put out first, because they're on fire, and it is moving rapidly. And I learned some valuable lessons from that.
And regardless of what the person's MOS is too, right? Because like you could be infantry and okay, fine, you deploy, obviously infantry, it gets involved in combat, more frequently probably than other soldiers, right? But so you might expect, okay, well, there's an opportunity there for something tragic to happen. But like you said, on the way to drill, you could just be driving your car and get hit by a drunk driver or something, or something can happen. Look, this can happen to anybody. This is just planning so that if something happens, you have your family has the protection. They get the benefits. They get the financial security and all that kind of stuff. Like, look, I have life insurance. It's not for me. I'm not going to see a penny of that life insurance, right? It's for when I go, my family is taken care of. So it's one of those things that, is it morbid to have to think about that stuff? Sure, absolutely. But we all have an expiration date. And unfortunately, I wish everybody could stick around, but that's just not the way things work. And so, get those things in order. Go through the TAPS program and get that binder that you're referring to, and check those boxes. I know when I was deployed, A lot of things like our credit card and things like that were all in my name, and it was like, well, what if something happens to me? How is my wife gonna, pay those bills and continue to use the credit card, all those kind of things. So like we just went through and took care of all that stuff, the banking accounts, checking, credit cards, all the any payments that had to be done, just made sure she had access to all that stuff, because I might not, I might be in the middle of nowhere and it's like, oh, a bill's due, I got to go figure out how to pay my bills. Like, that's something. And so even if something happened to me, she would just be able to continue as if I was still there, so that, yeah, things that you don't normally think about, you gotta kind of say, okay, what happens if that person is not here, and then go that way, right?
I had a one that threw me off was, and I tell everyone this now, is you need to have a sheet of every single any social media that you're on, anything that you log into. You need the username and password, and you need to give it to your spouse, because like her social media after she died was blowing up, and I didn't even know how to access it, to shut it down, to, like, hey, what is going on? Who are these people? And it blew me away of how much little I did know of my wife and her, where she banked and where her credit cards and where was the car note. Like, I couldn't even tell you where that was at. I wasn't thinking about it. I took it for granted. Oh, she's got it. When it's time, but when after she died, I was like, I don't even know where it's at. I don't even know who's paying, where the payments are supposed to go to. And but yeah, so having a sheet with everything that you access and the way to access it and to your spouse will save so much on the backside if something happens.
Yeah, and to that point, sharing passwords and all that kind of stuff. A real easy thing that I do with my wife, there are password managers that you can use. There's things out there. There's LastPass and FirstPass. There's a whole bunch of them. Just Google password managers. I'm not going to recommend any to anyone, but they have ways to share passwords. So she can have an account, I can have an account, and if there's anything I need to share with her, I just share it with her, and now all of a sudden she has access to it. So, if something happens to me, yeah, she has easy access to all my stuff that she needs to have access to. So it, to me, yeah, absolutely, that makes sense.
And you think about it, like, well, I don't want her to be in my business. Well, if you respect and trust your spouse enough to marry, why don't you trust them enough to give them your passwords and access to all your accounts? Because that's in essence what it is you're just giving them, not that they're going to access it and check behind you, but in case something happens, they can get in there and absolutely continue to operate without, a delay. Because we like what saved us was a general power of attorney. Because at when after she died, I was running into just roadblock after roadblock of, well, how do I get that? Well, are you the guardian of the state? And I'm like, I don't even know what that means, man. Like, I'm her husband. And they're like, yeah, but are you the guardian of her estate? There's two different things. So I had to learn really quick. And thank God I had the general power of attorney just in case, which was basically my trump card, that anytime someone went, I just pulled it out and went, okay, now will you give me access? And they're like, yes. So it's got to be something that you got. I get it. You probably don't, but you need it for just that one reason right there.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like I was saying, a lot of this stuff, it's morbid to think about. Like, not a lot of people, it's not a fun conversation to have. Like sit down with your spouse and be like, "Hey, let's talk about what happens if I'm gone." Like that, nobody wants to talk about that stuff, right? But to your point, that's the responsible thing to do. Take some time, do some planning, look to see, like you said, having a power of attorney, having, all these things, available will make things easier for you. Put it this way, you're already going to be stressed enough. You've just lost the person who's probably closest to you, and you don't want to add more stress on top of that. So take some time now, invest some time to figure out how to, mitigate some of that, right? Absolutely. Well,
I didn't even go back to the house. So like after her death, I couldn't even bring myself to go back. Well, everything's there. The binder where we keep all the kids' birth certificates and social security numbers and all their key documents, and I'm like, I'm trying to tell somebody where to find it. And it's and you're limited to like, well, I thought it was over there. I thought, where did we move that to? And there's a lot of that going on after the death because you're not thinking clearly at all. There's
No.
nothing is making any sense. And so you'll send people on wild goose chases only to find out that it was in your car, just because of.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, first off, yeah, keep things in, all together in a, safe location. But again, to the point of you never know what's going to happen. Put things in like a fireproof safe. Important documents like that, because God forbid there's a fire in your house. You don't want to lose all of those documents too, right? So, keep them together, in a place where it's easy to access, but in a, potentially a fireproof container as well, because it just, you never know. We're going down a, we can probably go down a rabbit hole of all sorts of things. This.
Three-part series, just that alone.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole. I still can see the light at the top, so we can climb our way out. But, for the listeners who maybe want to get involved and support some of the stuff that you're working on, especially with the Travis Manion Foundation and things like that, where can people go to find out more information and get involved, or either personally get involved, donations, all those kind of things, I'm sure everyone's looking for.
Yeah, so if you're just to go in and look up Travis Manion Foundation, the website is not hard to find, and they show each state and what's going on in each state, and you can click on it. They've got like a big roadmap, and it's like these are the things that are going on in this region, and you could literally click on them, and it opens up and it tells you where it's at, point of contact. If it's a donations, you want to join the mission, you want to volunteer. It's got everything you would possibly need on the actual travismanion.com website. And if you're wanting to join the mission in a certain state, you just click on the state. And what it does is, if they've got a chapter there, they will get you in touch with. And it's basically just a form you fill out and you hit submit. Like, I want to know more about the mission. I want to join the mission. And then based on how you respond to it will send that information to regionals, who then sends it to that state. And whatever state has a chapter there or a point of contact, then they will get that information to them. And then that's how I get it. Like, for Oklahoma, we don't have a chapter yet, but I do get the information from anyone that wants to be a part of it. And it comes right to me from the regional. So he'll send me stuff probably once a week, and then I'm sending emails out to try to get people, hey, involved, and hey, what do you want to do? We got a race, or we want to do the Manion Walk, which is coming up in April. For the CrossFitters, and I mean, we've got something for everybody.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, like I said earlier, I will put a link to the Travis Manion Foundation website. Also, you mentioned TAPS. I'm going to put that link in the show notes as well for folks, so you can check all those out. Both great organizations. Definitely utilize the resources that are available through those organizations. I think you guys are doing great work. I'm looking forward to see how Oklahoma grows. Hopefully. You can get on par or exceed the level of Phoenix out here. But looking forward to seeing how that expands and how that grows. But Aaron, I first off, I want to just thank you for taking the time to come on the show and share your story, share your experiences, and for all the work that you do. To make sure that the survivors are not forgotten and that they get the benefits and the respect that they deserve. I think it's amazing work that you're doing, and I hope that you keep that up. And thank you again for taking the time to come on the show.
It's been an honor. Thank you.